You're listening to the fourth episode of Maiden Flight of the Avenger, a Gearheart novella. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. This episode features the voice talents of Renee White and Brooke Fox. If you're listening on iTunes and you haven't had a chance yet, stop by and check out the Gearheart blog at www.thegearheart.com. There you'll find interviews, articles, the Maiden Flight soundtrack, and more. You can also follow me on Twitter, username TheGearHeart, or you can email me directly at alex@thegearheart.com. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of the Gearheart. Last time, on the Gearheart, Augustus found the smoking remains of his beloved engine, only to learn his friend and mentor, Agent Betty Misko, had been killed in the blast. As he left the scene of the disaster, he spotted one of Charles Patrick's men. To make matters worse, the young mechanic was told that Betty was not all she seemed, and that she was a wanted woman. Will he find the evidence to clear her name? Find out on the Gearheart. How much time had passed before he saw Isabel descend the stairs with a plate of sandwiches and two glasses of milk. Augustus rubbed his eyes and sat up, feeling a warm, sticky tendril of drool on his chin. He'd been asleep on the floor. Concrete dust clung to his hair and clothes, and when he wiped the saliva away, he left a trail of paste in its wake. His sprained wrist ached from where he'd rolled onto it. Isabel reached the office and stood before him with concerned eyes. She held the tray out. Just leave it over there, he sighed and picked up a chisel. He'd mostly exposed the door of the safe, but he dared not remove the nail yet to get to the spin dial.
I thought I would eat with you.
No time.
Because you're too busy working on the replacement airframe? I can see you've made so much progress.
Augustus slapped down the chisel and looked Isabel in the eyes. You must love this, huh? Hearing about my friend the traitor. I bet it's a real gas for you.
Of course not! There are dead seekers, and I never like hearing about that.
Then maybe now isn't the time for your sass. I got a lot of work to do, and it'll get done faster without your smart mouth.
Gus, quit being a child and listen to me. You're going to have to... What is that?
Isabel noticed the wreckage of the wall where the metal door lay mostly exposed. It's a safe.
Buried in the wall?
Well, there was a false front, but I couldn't find the hinge, so I knocked it off.
Why is it there?
Gus looked at the safe, then back to Isabel. You tell me. No machines in there, at least none that I can hear.
Can you open it?
Don't you think it would be open if I could? Isabel took a step closer.
What's in it?
The mechanic sighed and put his forehead to his open palm. Do you think about these questions before you ask them?
I was asking for your opinion.
Something important. This ain't like any safe you've ever seen before. It's gotta be Betty's design, considering the advanced materials used in its construction. We're talking about magically hardened alloys with chemical... When Augustus looked back at Isabel... She pointed at the frosted window of the garage office. The mechanic followed her gaze and spotted the silhouette of a stocky man drawing near to the glass. Augustus scooted away from the window and toward Betty's desk where he kept his gun. Isabel winked at him and raised her voice.
This isn't the time for your stupid toys, Gus. We have serious work to do.
She shouted, scooting to the table and slowly tracing a whispering, flaming glyph underneath, so as not to light the room. Augustus took his pistol in hand and quietly checked the cylinder.
Yeah? Well, maybe you ought to keep your fat nose out of everyone else's business.
She grimaced slightly, but continued watching the shadow.
I hardly think that's the point here. Why can't you just grow up and do what you're told?
Because my orders are coming from a crazy old witch with dumpy gams.
Isabel recoiled, losing her glyph with a pop.
How dare you, you little—
He's getting away!
Shouted the mechanic, seizing a pipe wrench and hurling it through the office window. The glass gave way to reveal a figure in a dark coat and slouch cap dashing into the alley beyond.
Hey, stop!
Move!
Isabel retraced her glyph, much larger this time, and the remains of the window glowed orange, peeling away. She vaulted off the desk and threw the hole into the alleyway, scattering the mechanic's tools to the floor. While many complaints came to Augustus's mind, he didn't voice any of them in the circumstances. He scrambled onto the desk and dove after her. Searing hot silica singed his shoe as his foot fell clumsily upon the hot divide, but he managed to stumble outside. Gathering his feet under him, Augustus turned to see Isabel sprinting for the opening to the nearby street. The other agent ran much faster than him, so by the time he had caught up, Isabel stood huffing on the sidewalk before the empty street. She cursed under her breath and gestured to a forest green roadster speeding away.
He had a driver waiting,
she explained between gasps, before uttering an unladylike curse. Augustus looked at the parked cars, two delivery trucks, and a converted Northlander Army moped. He touched the gas tank with his bandaged hand and reached inside with his magic. The engine purred awake, then roared with delight. Across the street at a grocer's, a man in officer's greens leapt from the front door, shouting wildly at the pair of agents.
Let's go!
Augustus yelled before mounting the bike. He grabbed Isabel's wrist, and she jerked it free before throwing her own leg over without his help.
Step on it!
The moped rocketed forward, and Augustus's power wound through its engine, adjusting the timing until the bike erupted into a highly tuned scream. They raced through downtown Edenton after their quarry, blasting past storefronts, homes, and pedestrians. Isabel could not contain an elated yelp and laughed wildly.
All right, when we get close enough, let him have it, Izzy!
Don't be stupid, Gus!
Then she screamed as they almost clipped a 5-ton fruit truck.
We're in broad daylight. Think about the directive.
They weaved across several lanes of oncoming traffic to avoid a parked sedan before dodging back in behind their target. Augustus could feel the tires start to give momentarily, and he knew if he was any rougher, he would lay the bike down. He shouted back to his partner.
What, am I supposed to ask him to stop or something?
Maybe you ought to say please. This was your plan.
I can't get close enough to touch his car without getting both of us killed.
And I'm not going to go around hurling fireballs down Broadview Avenue, Gus, so think of something.
The whiz of a bullet by their ears cut into Isabel's train of thought. The passenger had popped open the rear windshield, and they now stared down the barrel of a gun. Augustus glanced back once to see that Isabel hadn't been hit, and he saw her wide-eyed, her hand feeling her smooth cheek.
He almost shot me in the face,
she breathed. Another shot cracked out, just missing Augustus's front tire as they struck a bump in the road. The mechanic weaved out to the driver's side to make himself a harder target. Then he heard Isabel scream,
"Eat it, scumbag!"
and loose a comet of fire from her fast-working fingers. The roadster swerved out of the way, and the ball of flames crashed into a nearby brick wall, barely missing a gaggle of pedestrians. The tires of their quarry screamed and momentarily lost traction before regaining their grip on the street. Isabel swore into his ear.
I told you I couldn't go slinging spells downtown.
You didn't hit anyone!
I'm not worried about my aim, I'm worried about his driving!
The roadster clipped the back tires of an ancient-looking carriage car, plowing through its wooden axle and spinning the unfortunate victim directly into Augustus's path. The mechanic cut into the other lane of traffic and up onto the sidewalk, just in time to see the target execute a sudden right turn and barrel down another street. He mimicked, nearly touching his handlebars to the pavement before redlining the engine. That car never should have made that turn. Augustus scarcely managed it with 1/10 of the weight. As they careened up the road, he couldn't help but wonder about the identity of their target. Could it be a racer? Which one of them would be on Chuck's payroll? Augustus spied a split in the road ahead in front of an abandoned building. He knew the roadster would attempt a similar turn, and he felt uncertain about the bike's capabilities to execute another. As they blazed toward the intersection, another shot rang out.
Isabel, heat up the intersection!
Gus shouted.
What?
I want you to get it as hot as you can!
She complied, tracing an impassioned glyph to reveal blasting flames on the other side. The white-hot rocket of fire careened over the fleeing automotive to slam into the bare black asphalt of the intersection. Augustus could see the heat plume shimmer in the air, even from 100 yards away. He choked his brakes and slid the bike sideways, catching himself with his foot as they came to a stop. The car kept going, and as it made to turn, the tires lost traction, painting greasy streaks of molten rubber as it skated toward the front of the abandoned building. Augustus watched the structure vomit stone and spent wood onto the vehicle with the impact. He raced the motorcycle up the street, careful to leap up onto the sidewalk when he closed on the scorching hot intersection and made his way to the rubble. He leapt off and raised his revolver as he approached the smoking, half-buried remains of the car. The passenger window shattered, and Betty Misko climbed out, looking less than healthy, but healthier than dead. Her bloodied right hand held a pistol, smoke dripping from its barrel. It hadn't been a man shooting at them. Betty? Said the mechanic in the sudden quiet of the crash.
You got me, kid.
She groaned with a smile.
That was some fancy driving.
Isabel moved to flank the agent.
Tell your driver to come out with his hands up.
I would, but he's dead. Sorry, Toots.
Augustus moved to confirm the grisly fate of the man while Isabel watched Betty. The collapsed automotive's roof frame ended where the man's head should have been. The agent turned back to his prisoner as she started to raise her pistol.
Don't even think about it!
He shouted, drawing a bead on her chest.
You ain't gonna kill me, bucko.
I'm all aces with a pistol and you know that, Betty.
Doesn't matter. You couldn't kill me even if you had the guts.
Isabel looked to the gathering crowd across the street. Men and women had come to the corners, and several sets of curtains winked open across the way.
Who is your driver? One of Chuck's men?
Grow up, baby. You got a dead woman standing in front of you, and all you can do is ask if I'm working for Chuck?
Are you? Asked Augustus.
What do you think, genius?
The mechanic kept his sights carefully trained on her, even though she had begun to pace. Why did you come back?
You're a real piece of work. You've got this us versus them idea in your head, and you just can't shake it, can you?
Betty laughed, then sighed, leaning back on the wreckage of her vehicle.
It ain't about seekers and gangsters and governments or any of that crap. You're chasing down friends and enemies, but the smart ones of us, are thinking about interests. There's a critical demand in this world for what we do, Gus. And you're going to give yourself away for free.
The man grit his teeth. He could feel blood pumping in his neck and hands.
So that's how you justify being a traitor? How about the alchemy stuff? The dead agents?
100% true. I started studying alchemy after we got back from the Erlanger ruins 4 years ago. Cercival caught wind and sent a few new agents down here to take care of me. Too bad they weren't all that bright.
Why were they going to kill you? Asked Augustus. Betty shrugged.
Because alchemy is beyond their control. I didn't do anything yet, but I figured it was time to scram when they started scheming. You two ought to wake up and see what the Seekers are before you get an ice-cold splash of reality.
Police sirens blared in the distance. They would arrive in a few seconds.
But, hey, I didn't answer your first question. I came to give you what's in the trunk. I was hoping to get you alone, Gus.
Augustus's eyes flickered to the brick-beaten trunk of the roadster and back to Betty. What? Why?
So you'll see what I'm saying. Well, folks, gotta go.
She chuckled, raising her pistol level with Augustus's face before he could react. A split second later, a ball of flame enveloped her entire body, and she began to scream out with a sound the young mechanic had never heard from a human before. The flaming woman convulsed and dashed madly, waving her arms like a rabid animal, until she succumbed to the fire. She fell to the ground, a crackling heap of charred flesh. Augustus turned and looked at Isabel, the light from her glyph fading from existence. As the flames disappeared, Only the ashen color of her face lingered. Destroying the body at the hangar had been one thing, but this was quite another. The sirens drew nearer, and the pair only had a motorbike. Normally, standard operating procedure would dictate the extraction of the set of corpses, but they didn't have time. Augustus unceremoniously banged the trunk, his magic forcing the mechanical latch open, and found a pile of blankets over a leather-bound tome. No writing graced the cover, and a cursory leaf through its pages revealed a handwritten manuscript.
"We have got to give that to Richardson,"
said Isabel. "Not before I figure out what it is." He and Isabel climbed back aboard the bike and sped away.
"For obvious reasons, I've summoned your headmaster and the other members of your chapter."
The headmistress creaked.
"We need more men for this one than my two remaining agents. Also, our contacts in the police force are not substantial, but we were able to get into the morgue. I take it some of your discretionary funds were involved?"
asked Isabel.
"Indeed,"
she replied, signing out a glyph. The lights dimmed, and the floating corpse of a man appeared in the center of the office, flickering like a film projector.
"And it was money well spent. We identified the driver."
Isabel sat up a little straighter. Augustus stood and walked to the ghostly image. "This is the guy?" The leader gestured to the unblinking face.
"This is he, the late Special Agent Anton Pillings, a member of the doomed task force Black Osprey, presumed dead after his unit was ambushed in the Argent Crescent. They were based in Moreau."
Augustus scowled. "Black Osprey? That's the second one to turn up like this."
"Not that you're supposed to know that, but yes. The first Osprey corpse appeared in an ash bin in Laurent, shortly after the team departed for the Crescent. Single bullet to the back of the head. How did you hear about it?"
"The infamous murder in Moreau. Unsolved killing of an important seeker," said Augustus. "Everyone knows about it." Isabel stood and joined the pair at the unpleasant scene.
"So with one of the Ospreys murdered, why didn't the investigators suspect Pillings? His body wasn't at the ambush site." "I didn't mean to mislead you when I said Special Agent Pillings was presumed dead before. His file shows him as being quite deceased, with a body recovered and interred at Five Oaks."
"But he wasn't?"
"The corpse of Pillings the recovery team found in the Crescent was both recognizable and decapitated. You cannot fault the investigators."
"So are we reopening the Osprey file?" asked the mechanic.
"No, those records are sealed far beyond my level of access. Rest assured, someone is, though. Right now, our priority is to apprehend Charles Patrick and Betty Misko."
Augustus scoffed. "So you don't think she's dead this time either?"
"Agent Ellsworth, I need to know. What did she say to you before the altercation?"
"She told me she was working for money and not ideals. Wanted me to do the same. She's got to be with Patrick, wherever he is." Augustus's eyes met Isabel's, and she stayed quiet about the book.
"I see. I don't see her swaying someone with your record. Why would she want you?"
"Does anyone know? I'm guessing I'm just that good, and she probably told Chuck about me." Isabel grunted. "Yeah, I didn't hear you get an invite, Agent Carricker," said the mechanic.
"Yeah, well, you didn't get one either, so try not to get too excited about working for a gangster."
"Yeah, well, maybe that's because—"
"Will you both shut up?"
bellowed Richardson. When all had quieted, she adjusted her shirt sleeves and spoke softly.
"Neither of you will work for Mr. Patrick because he is missing. My agents tracked him to the airport, but they were unable to find where he took his private plane. Furthermore, the flight had several boxes of cargo, any of which could have contained Betty Misko."
Richardson shot Augustus a stern glare.
"Agent Ellsworth, the Council shares your belief that Misko wants to recruit you to a private enterprise. Perhaps she will view you as that much greater of an asset if you complete your work on the Red Rocket. It is therefore the will of the Council that you continue your work. You should know that all eyes are upon you. You will compete in that race, and you will win. And then Betty Misko will attempt to recruit you. When she does, we will take her alive."
Augustus sat down and leaned back. "Uh-huh. And what's going to happen to the Red Rocket when it's completed?"
"That is not your concern, Agent."
"I just wanted to know. It seems a little strange that the council has lost all interest in the artifact we were trying to steal. Why are they so fixated on my flyer?
Because I'm told we need it. Are you a seeker or not, Ellsworth?
Augustus wove his fingers together in front of him and took a deep breath. I'm your man.
Betty Misko yet lives and has offered proof of her own treason. The council's interest in Charles Patrick wanes, even as they press Augustus harder for the next experimental war machine. Caught between his mentor and his allies, who can the young mechanic trust, and what secrets does the mysterious tome hold? Find out next time on The Gearheart. This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.
Today's podcast has been brought to you by Snodgrass's Fine Transforming Robots, multi-part war machines for the minuscule budget. Do you want to have an animal-shaped robot that combines with other robots into a human-shaped robot? But of course, why wouldn't you? That's a perfectly reasonable thing to ask for, and an idea that has absolutely no flaws or inefficiencies. Here at Snodgrass's Fine Transforming Robots, we have robots built for any budget, created from materials ranging from unobtainium to cardboardanium. So the next time you're investing in a completely reasonable robot design, think Snodgrass. And by Pip's Pilferers, sweet-faced street urchins with a penchant for pinching purses. Need a purse lightened, an heirloom swiped, or just a few people shanked in their sleep? Come to Pip's Pilferers for all of your mouthy little street gang needs. But don't forget, if you don't pay your bill, they'll kill you. Ha! What lovable little tykes. Pip's Pilferers, just outside Camp Wanna Kill a Man. And lastly, by Maiden Flight of the Avenger, the original score. The only musical score made from real crushed singing spiders. Pick up a copy today for $6.99 on iTunes, Amazon, or wherever fine MP3s are sold. Maiden Flight of the Avenger, the original score. For a soundscape of delight, think Maiden Flight. Non-musical claims cannot be verified. Use only as directed.